you have to delegate or else you're going to overwhelm yourself. Now, if you're one of the people that has to do a job that's been delegated to you, then you got to master that. I'm not saying then delegate that because there's all levels to it. But
on today's episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Coach Brian Adams, the assistant men's basketball coach at the University of Alabama. Coach Adams brings a wealth of experience across the NBA, G League, and college levels. He began his coaching career with the Boston Celtics, which then led him to Harvard as the director of basketball operations before moving to Marist as an assistant coach. He then joined the LA Clippers, where he served as a player development coach and later became the head coach of the Agua Caliente Clippers in the G League. Adams also spent time as an assistant with the Philadelphia 76ers and most recently held a position with the Detroit Pistons. In 2024, he joined Nate Oates' staff at Alabama, bringing NBA-caliber development and defensive insight to the program. In this episode, we talk about what he has learned from some of the best head coaches he has worked with in his career, his advice for navigating career moves, and his defensive philosophy. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Brian Adams. Dr. Dish Basketball, the number one selling shooting machine in the world, provides the most innovative game-like training with on-demand workouts, multiplayer stat tracking, and instant analytics that allow coaches and players to be better every day. All you have to do is mention Rising Coaches for an exclusive discount on a Dr. Dish shooting machine for your team.
Welcome back, coaches, and what is going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Doug Caputo, Alan Major here, as always, joined today and excited with somebody who has seen a lot of different sides of basketball, a high wealth of knowledge for the game, and we're very excited to be able to chat with the assistant coach over at the University of Alabama, ladies and gentlemen, Coach Brian Adams. Coach Adams, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited and looking forward to chatting with you. I appreciate you bringing me on.
Dougie, you're too young to know Brian Adams, old rock guy. But anyway, yeah, just get that disclaimer.
I had to know Brian Adams growing up.
No, we appreciate it, man. And yeah, thanks to Chris Holguin for the assist and getting us hooked up, man. So we really appreciate you doing this, brother. Thank you.
Of course. Yeah, no, happy to talk with you guys. Excited.
So just to say real quick, as I mentioned, you've had an extremely high wealth of knowledge. You have seen a bunch of different sides of the game with it. Honestly, it's some of the most top tier programs. So it's really good to be able to like dig in deeper and learn a little bit more. With your unique journey across the different levels, being in the college level, being at the NBA level, take us back like the early influences, right? Before you started with that Boston Celtics position, just what were some moments that said, I want to get into this and this is the profession that I want to go towards?
Yes. Coming up, I always loved basketball. I played in middle school. I played in high school. It really drove me. It was the sport I was the most obsessed with. I played baseball. I ran cross country, track and field, played a little football in middle school, but basketball was the sport that drew my attention. It's what I wanted to be great at. And it was what I was obsessed with. My dad was a diehard Celtics fan growing up. So we'd have the Celtics game on every night. And that's before the fans of today are spoiled. When I was growing up, it was some hard times, but we fought through, we strived through, and we made it. But so a combo of kind of just obviously the love of the sport at the grassroots level and wanting to play it and wanting to do it, combined with I had a great high school coach. And my high school coach, I went to a prep school, Millbrook Prep in mid-state New York. And my high school coach, Tim McEnroe, was just awesome. And we had kids from the city and we had kids from all over the country. And I was actually a day student there, but I was on the team. And I just, the early stages of building a team, having a program, it just really appealed me. And even at that early level, like the immediate thought was maybe I'd go back and be a prep school coach. And that just really excited me, appealed to me. So you combine that with watching Celtics games every night. And then obviously college basketball takes off and you start to be able to watch it on ESPN a couple nights a week and go on and just all combined. And pretty quickly I knew that I probably wasn't going to make it to the NBA as a player or any high level. And so coaching was the path I wanted to take. And I was pretty set on it from the jump. Yeah.
What was it about Coach McEnroe? Did the way that he coached you make you want to become a coach? I know that that's part of my story. My high school coach, he's the first one that kind of saw it in me. I was thinking about it. You never know for sure, but did the way he coached you, though, say, man, if I could be 20% of this guy, I'll be happy.
Yeah. No, he was great to me. He was hard on me, and it was in a good way, though, because it was one of those things where I never felt like it was personal leaving the court or anything like that. And I thought that he wanted the best out of me. So that was huge. I also saw, though, it's a unique situation. And now being back in college, you do see the great program. You know, you travel to these high school events, you travel to the AU events, and the guys doing it right that really care, they're really creating a true family. They're putting players are sleeping at their houses. They're paying for them to go to a camp. And he was that guy, and finding places for the kids to stay over Christmas break. And a few of them would come bunk with me and my family. And it was just like, it was just such an awesome environment. And then we had some personalities, and he managed those personalities. And I remember a few early moments where asking him, oh man, what are we going to do about this? And it turned out he was actually testing them, or he was unfazed by, when you're younger, you don't realize adversity seems like a little confrontation seems pretty rough. But as you get a little older and you realize it's all part of the game, but I got to see that he was older at the time, obviously, and he didn't mind any of it. And he was going to hold guys accountable and to his standard. And it was cool to see him mesh different personalities together.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the best things about our game, man, is just when you have people, not just our influences, but just that there's always that one person right up front that kind of started the nudge. And that's pretty cool, man. I mean, just how vivid those memories are. I mean, you're talking, you know, that's a long time ago, and you're just able to reel that stuff off like that. So
yeah, no, awesome. I remember going up to a Middlesex basketball tournament, staying in a hotel with the team. It was huge, like in a hotel.
Exactly.
Those are the best experiences. And like before them, looking back, or I should say, like when you're in them, looking into them as a kid, you're like, this is probably going to be not fun. I got to go stay at my coach's house. Or like, there was a time in college, we had to take a 24-hour bus trip to Florida. Okay. Not fun. Was not fun. And going into it, you're like, this is going to be miserable because our head coach didn't fly. That's a whole different thing. But so we had to take a bus trip, and we're like, all right, let's do it. After it, and looking back on it now, it's like that was one of the best experiences, and everybody got so much closer through those experiences.
No, 100%. Those are awesome times.
So I want to jump into, just to give everybody an idea, as I said, you've been with the Celtics, then you step into the college ranks, go Harvard, Marist, and then go back to the NBA, the Clippers, Philly, Detroit, and then now where you're at currently, Bama. But I know you also had a couple of head coaching stints in there as well with Taipei and the Clippers G League as well. But with all of those experience, you've gone from college to pro to college and so on. Like a lot of coaches, I feel, and a lot of questions that at least I've heard or seen are people struggle when to stay or when to move on, especially with if you're in a good position and there's another good position open up, do I leave? Do I stay? So like, at least just talk us through, no specific leave, but unless you want to narrow down to one, just walk us through one of the hardest decisions that maybe you've had to make and just kind of processing that.
Yeah, no, two really come to mind. And the first one was when I was the video coordinator for the Celtics. I had been there 5 years and I was young at the time. I was very fortunate to get it very young. I'm still in my mid-20s, and to be quite honest, I had no business maybe being promoted to an NBA coach or anything close to that at that time, even though I think I did a really good job being a video coordinator. But I was still super naive and wet behind the ears with it all, and I really wanted to coach, though, and I really wanted an opportunity, and it just – I really didn't think it was going to come then with just the way it was structured and the way it was Boston was. And Doc, it was always great to me. At the same time, I don't think, looking back, I don't even think I was ready. It was just this weird time where I knew it wasn't going to happen with the Celtics. And the third assistant spot at Harvard had been open, and a couple of people had said, hey, I know some people and I know this guy, would you be interested? And I actually was, and college had always appealed to me because I thought that the idea of running your own program eventually, or just program building, was higher at the college level, and it really kind of attracted me. And I figured at a young age, I'd be able to coach, unlike in the NBA at the time. I just wasn't going to get those opportunities. And everybody told me, at some point, if you want to coach in college, you have to get recruiting experience. So you got to decide on this before all of a sudden you're 35 and you know, married with kids, and I'm 41 and not married and don't have kids. So anyways, I could have waited. So I took the pros, the cons, and I was really nervous. And the biggest advice I give this to people all the time is that whenever you're in a good situation, as you referenced, there's a chance that you don't get back to that good situation. And I did really like the NBA, and the NBA was hard to get into. And I knew I was very fortunate and borderline lucky at the time. You know, you kind of had to risk that maybe you wouldn't get back and just make what you thought was the best decision for you. And Harvard at the time, Coach Amaker had it rolling. I was going to get to coach. He straight up told me I was going to get to coach and recruit. And I just went for it. And I definitely at that young age was a little nervous, a little scared, but I thought it was the opportunity to do what I wanted to do. And looking back, I'm really glad I did, but I do remember being scary. I do think what comes from that is that sometimes if you do deem yourself stuck in a spot, you do have to shake the system a little, and you got to know the risks that come with it, because sometimes there are some real risks. There's a chance I never get back to the NBA, and that was a risk, and I was willing to take it. And I thought maybe the rest of my path would be in college, and like I was willing, that was fine with me, and I'm going to figure it out. We had been let go in Philly. I struck out on a ton of opportunities that summer. We were headed into August, the first week of August, and I had interviewed for a bunch of stuff and I hadn't gotten it, both behind the bench NBA and some G League opportunities. And I knew that there wasn't a lot of coaching jobs open that I fit the profile for. I have a really good agent. And I also knew there was maybe a chance I could get some scouting work at the end of summer, maybe a part-time, maybe I lucked out and it was full-time, whether it be college or advanced scouting. So that would have been fine with me. But I was nervous. I was nervous. My Philly contract had ended. I wasn't going to get paid from Philly. So I got offered a head coaching job in Taiwan. And I am enamored with the idea of being a head coach. I do love that. I was a G League head coach. I aspire to be a head coach, whether it's NBA or college at some point. That's a goal. That's a dream. And having done it at the G League level, it appealed to me to work on that area of the craft for me. And also, once again, I was like, let me shake the system a little. I don't know. It'll be a good story to tell. But I'm not going to lie. I was nervous, sad, depressed. And the biggest thing I told myself is that at the end of the day, you control what you can control. And I came up with this slogan for myself, and it's the path is the path. And like whatever that path is, if that meant I was an international coach the rest of my life, then that was the path. If it led me back to the NBA, that was the path. College, whatever. And I still lost sleep over it, but that definitely helped me. And to this day where I am right now and looking back at my journey, like the path is something I definitely think like, you just got to embrace it and you got to see where it takes you. And if you care about something a lot, whatever's right for you, if you work hard enough, I think it's going to find you.
No, that's so good, man. We say that a lot out here. We like to say run your own race, but that's really the same approach. And obviously defensively, it's good to have your head on a swivel when you're dealing with the coaching profession and what everything else and everyone else is going on around you. Not so good to have your head on a swivel, because you can see everything that's going on, and that's half the battle.
No,
but that, right? Because I mean, that's what can really just pound away at you.
This saying, I'm sure you guys have all heard it, but it's so true. Comparison is the thief of joy. And
completely. Listen,
I can act as though, oh no, I'm this boom neutral thinking. All no, I every day I'm jealous of something, and I have to reset. And you just gotta. You got to control what you control. And like you said, run your own race. And like you said, put those blinders on and just do what you can do.
Yeah. No, it sounds great in theory. In practice, it's a totally different deal, man. It just 100%. Is. That's as human as we feel as coaches when that's going on.
Other than I agree. I totally
agree.
Maybe
let your players down. That's maybe another thing altogether. That's a killer internally. But just that's just something what – we could have stopped the pod right now, and it's going to resonate with thousands of people, just that alone. But obviously, I know we got some other really good stuff to dig into. But thank you for sharing that, man. That transparency, that's awesome.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah.
people always think the grass is greener on the other side. That's the one thing I always like to, especially not even just coaches, but players now with the portal. The amount of people that have hit the portal, I forget the number, but it was unreal in comparison to what, a year ago?
It's 2,500. Like year. Right around 2,500.
Yeah, I remember it was over 2,000. Number.
Yeah.
But just like the amount of kids that, okay, like for instance, there was one kid I just saw recently. He was starting for a Division II program, getting about 17 to 20 minutes as a second-year guy. They'd had a very good season, and now he's out of there. And I'm thinking, maybe there was something personal that we don't know. I don't know. But like, then you're also hiding stuff to us, and then that's an alarm. But then my point of it is you fought your way halfway through the season into a starting role. You started doing good in that starting role, and now you're hitting the portal to get out of there. It's not always greener on the other side. Sometimes we've had kids leave programs. I've heard kids leave programs, come back and be like, yeah, it's not what I was expecting. I had it a lot better than we did. But to your point, going back to it, like you left, it obviously worked out. You got a great head coaching role, but talk to us a little bit about how it was. Like, how was that coaching in Taiwan as a head coach over there?
Yeah, no. So it was a great experience because I got to be a head coach. I got to deal with a lot of adversity. That was my first time truly being that far away from home, like the other side of the world. And I got a lot of advice from players who had played abroad saying, just a heads up, it's a different feel. And I was ever, they're going to put me up in a nice place, but that's real. And when you're isolated like that and you don't speak a language, it's definitely different. Yeah. I'll say I loved the fact that I got to work on my head coaching craft every single day. There was a game a week and at times big breaks. So we had a lot of practice. And at the time, now coming from college, I probably would have been more mentally prepared. And having been around, Coach Oates has some amazing drills I could have really worked those guys over there with. But I was coming from the NBA, and you play 82 games, and you have so practice, not to give Iverson's line, but we're talking about practice. And then, listen, I had a general manager who had come from the high school ranks over there. So, like, just we thought about things way differently. But I will say the ownership was awesome to me. So it was cool. It was cool. Not speaking the language causes you to have to teach a lot more and really try to show visually and all that stuff. It ended up being a great experience. And it was also, they say, do hard things in life, do uncomfortable things. It made me very uncomfortable just being over there and in a foreign country and with all that practice time and pretty isolated as far as like support and help go. It was challenging for me. And so I remember knowing when I was in it, how difficult it was for me mentally. And I definitely think I feel the benefits of it today because that challenge has hardened me a little.
Yeah, for sure. That's a 10-month season over there, right?
Yeah. So 10 months, but that season was bizarre. Is I felt horrible. My agent, somebody had left Monty's staff, and I have the same agent as Monty Williams. And I ended up connecting with Detroit mid-season and ended up taking an assistant job with the Pistons. And I was ecstatic to be getting back to the NBA, a new situation. But I do feel like I'm a man of my word. So I had told this team that I was their head coach, both players, ownership, general manager. And I pretty much was set that I was going to go take the Detroit job. I thought it was the best opportunity for me going forward. And I felt awful though, telling them, and that to their credit, they were amazing to me. They were the owners and the president of the team. They were awesome. So I was really grateful. And so it ended up being around a 6-month span for me.
So you mentioned you guys practice all the time. I know internationally, whenever we talk with people, they say in comparison from what we do, the States, they do a lot. We have a lot more games, AAU, and less practices. Like when you say a lot of practices, do you mean, what, 5 a week, 6 a week, or?
Yeah, it was six days a week and for 2 to 4 hours. And it was up to me. I could have went shorter. I could have given more days off. And sometimes I did. You know, their culture is very work heavy. Like they love to work over there. So, and this is probably an issue, but like I was trying to also do right by them. So then I'm probably going a little more than I would have done. But I did know that the formula that I had used in the NBA, it just wasn't going to work. You know, it wasn't going to be compatible over there. So I tried to just up my level. But there's a lot of things looking back that I wish I knew now. And I think I could have made it even better experience and gotten better practice reps. I was probably a little too generic with what I did.
Yeah. Like you said, in the league, man, practices are glorified shoot-arounds during the season.
100%.
Unless you've got a bye week or some type of a week where you don't get a lot of, and you're not playing that much. Once in the blue moon, you'll get up and down live, but even those segments are pretty contained.
No, totally. Totally. Yeah.
So for anybody who has been a head coach, as Al knows, this is my favorite question because I feel like this is something I hear so much, but, and this is, I guess, selfishly too, for me, like for the opportunity to become a head coach at some point, is there anything looking back throughout that position, as well as, I know, as we said, you were the head coach with the, in the G League as well. But like out of those two positions and opportunities, you've been a head coach. Is there anything you look back and you're like, I could have done this differently. Maybe this would have been a little bit better. Anything at all?
Yeah, no, I think that level of accountability, you can never be too high with it. Like, you always got to hold guys accountable, but more importantly, just establish what you're going to hold them accountable to from the jump and make sure you're behind that and you fully believe in it. And to me, present it to the team. So once you've set those standards and those bars, then hold them to it, because I do think as a younger coach, I think at times I fell into a little bit of maybe, I want to please the guys, or I don't want the confrontation. And I had things I believed in, but I think like just taking the step back and getting older and all that, you believe what you believe in. So believe in it, put it out there, let them know. And it's all for their greater good too, you know, that, and it's gotta be about that. If it's not, then you're not doing it right. But like everything you do should be to help them get better, because if they get better, the team gets better, the team wins, winning helps everybody. Just establish that stuff early and have a high level of accountability for it, because you know, that old saying, you are what you allow. At times, maybe as a young coach, maybe I allowed some things, and it's definitely tougher to reel them back in if you've let it out a little versus if you're tighter to then let it looser as you've established it. And I think that's the biggest thing I took from the G League. And I had a few summer league stints, and it's obviously a much smaller sample size, but I did feel good about trying to have that in mind going into the summer leagues. And then in Taiwan, I just didn't speak Chinese, so everything was out the window.
That's not an easy one.
The interesting thing is discipline's probably the least of your worries over there, I would imagine, just because work to them, there's a diligence, you know, in their culture about work. And they're very prideful about working. So slacking off is really like, you probably didn't have to worry about guys being on time and just some of the things that you might normally deal with. But like you said, their approach to it's totally different, which was probably a benefit in some ways to you.
No, 100%, 100%, yeah.
No, and one of the things that you said, making sure like holding people accountable to certain rules, that's the one thing. And this was maybe a couple of years ago. Went into an interview and somebody's like, I showed up probably a half hour early. All right. Now, this was because I also thought there was going to be a lot of traffic and so on and so forth. But my point is, like, the reason they were like, yeah, why were you so early? I thought about it after on my drive down. I was like, why was I so early? It was my high school coach, because he would always instill in me, if you are 15 minutes early, you are late. He goes, you better be here 15 minutes early. But if it's 14 minutes, like, your ass better be on the line, because you're going to be running for the rest of it until that buzzer goes off. He was the nicest guy. He called me today. It's one of those. So that's where I think I learned it from. That's why I'm glad you said that, is holding people accountable to those standards, because when he came in, I thought he was crazy. And I tell him all the time, I'm like, I thought you were insane, but it's crazy.
No, for sure. No, it's always cool to see those things that you've learned along the way and you've seen from this coach or that coach. And no, it's really cool.
Fits your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
So off of that, though, now stepping into more where you are now as an assistant, right? You've been under some, or I should say worked alongside some great, like, top elite minds. And as you said before, Doc Rivers, obviously now Nate Oates. Just, and of course there's more in there, but just that's just naming two. Like, what's something specific you feel with these elite coaches that you have been with and these high programs? Is there anything, like, behind the scenes that you would say that make these coaches so elite?
Yeah, no, that's a good one. So there's a bunch of things, and I've learned from so many different people and so many different guys along the way and amazing coaches, but a couple stand out. And when I've always had a defensive background, and by being the video for Doc, he always believed in a defensive coordinator. So the first guy that I really learned under was Thibodeau, Tom Thibodeau, obviously. And from Tibbs, it went to Lawrence Frank. I was fortunate to work for Lawrence for a year with the Celtics and then multiple years with the Clippers. But he then transitioned from defensive coordinator to president, vice president, and president. So those two guys really taught me like work ethic, standard, how they worked, how they prepared. And like they were methodical in their preparation. They were methodical in how they prepared game by game and what they were doing. And I think it was twofold. Like the two main things you see, though, was when I was younger, I remember thinking, man, Tibbs does all this stuff and I'm right here helping him. And I'm like, I believe in outworking people. That was an easy one for me. But he does all this stuff and maybe a small percentage of it is going to go to the team. And maybe I was like, is it too much? Is there supposed to be more balance and whatever? Like you can always, now being a defensive coordinator at Alabama, having been a head coach, you realize one thing with the preparation is if you have the answers to the test, or if you know the whys, why you're doing something or whatever, your ability to explain that and have that in mind is huge. And no player could question Tibbs or Lawrence on why are we blitzing this? We're blitzing it for X. We're blitzing it for Y. We want to get the ball in those hands. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Why don't we just switch it? The last two teams that switched it got punished on. So they had the why, they had the answers. And also maybe they had stuff, maybe they had adjustments to go to based on the preparation. So that was huge as far as that. And then at the end of the day, though, it's like I always try to get, I believe in this is a big core of what, like whether you're teaching a player, whether you're teaching a young coach, I'm holding myself to it, is that you do the work because it's your standard. And like, it's not about anything else. So if you believe in doing it to your best ability, then it's going to take a lot of work to be as good as you possibly can be. And in order to be that, you need to be prepared as you most possibly can be. So I really learned from those two is that you do the work to have your standard. And then going back to the first point I made is that then you hopefully have some answers to the why, and you can explain to guys your method behind it, because they don't like, especially at the NBA level, they don't want to just hear we're doing it because we're doing it. If you have the why, you get the buy-in a lot more. Or if they argue you, you can say, I just told you why, and we're going to start this way, and I believe to be true, and I'm not a stubborn coach. So to me, if something doesn't work, obviously, maybe we'll try to do it better, first of all. Maybe you'll have to make some substitutions, second of all. But if it's still not working, we can make adjustments. And hopefully the preparation you've done has prepared you. So those were huge things for me. And I have a few more if you want to hear them. I don't know.
Let it rip.
Yeah. So I think we talked about holding players accountable. Doc was great at, one, doing that. But two, in an 82-game season, I've never seen a guy not sweat the little things better than Doc. Like, he never used a bullet on like something he deemed to be whatever, like minor. Whereas I know this from being a head coach. I've seen coaches do it well. I've seen coaches struggle with it. But if you're going to die on a million hills, or if you're going to use up all your bullets, like, one, like you're going to lose the guy's ears. But two, I think you're going to exhaust yourself. I've found myself early in my coaching career exhausting myself on the little things, and pick the little things you want to stand for, like we talked about, and make it clear and then go for it. If being on time, which it should be, is one of your things, then it's always one of your things. If the players listening to headphones before the game is something that doesn't really bother, don't worry about it. If you heard that the coach around the corner, they're like a military, they never have their headphones. That's him. If he believes that, that's cool. And don't worry about it. You know what I mean? So Doc was great. And then the last thing that comes to mind is, I'm living it right now, Coach Oates. He believes, he, as he's evolved as a coach, he's really gone the coordinator route. He's always had an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator. And Coach is extremely prepared, and he's one of the most knowledgeable guys I've ever been around. So easily He could take either side of the ball. He could take both sides of the ball. But he's decided that in order to be the best head coach he can be, he's going to manage both sides, but he's also going to have guys specializing in it. But I think the thing where it resonates, even if you're not a coach that can have coordinators, if you're not a coach that's a head coach, at the end of the day, and I've got to get a lot better at this, you have to delegate or else you're going to overwhelm yourself. Now, if you're one of the people that has to do a job that's been delegated to you, then you got to master that. I'm not saying then delegate that because there's all levels to it. But
delegate to delegate.
Yeah.
Can't pass the buck. Don't be that guy. Pass the buck. That's right. Yeah, you got it, man. Yeah.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
No, let that guy do it.
Yeah. But as you do move up or you do get more responsibility, how can you efficiently delegate in order to take some stuff off your plate, in order to not drive yourself crazy and just kind of have more headspace to manage everything?
Quick question. You said speak shorter, and that my mind started going a little bit like for now, we'll say hypothetically like a scouting report. Okay. You're throwing together a scouting report. You go over about 7 or 8 guys that you have on the other team, the main 8 guys. And then like, would you say just typically speaking, I'm not speaking Alabama, but just in general, would you have like shorter snippets of each person? Would you say maybe go more like put it in paper longer and talk on it less? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no.
Because you don't want to overwhelm them with too much information because then they're going into the game like.
I think, and it just depends on your head coach's preference. I know there's some really good teams and some really good coaches doing very detailed scouting reports. I think attention spans are smaller these days. And then obviously we live in a digital era and a screen time era. So like it's hard to get them to focus. So I do think sometimes less is more with the main points, whether it's drive direction, shooter, not a shooter, drilling that home and weakify it. And so we definitely tone that stuff down.
Yeah.
Just to try to quickly capture their attention with the fear that too much, maybe we lose them on. But I'll say there are coaches that have proven that the thorough route is very effective.
Yeah, for sure. No, you're right. It all gets back to how the head coach thinks. So let's launch you forward here. You get a head coaching job, let's just say at the college level. And defensively, don't get yourself fired for Alabama's sake here. What are Brian Adams' defensive staples or cornerstones? Because the beauty of being a coordinator, and I was at Ohio State long ago when Coach Mata did that with us, I know my growth as a coach just took off because it wasn't like we used to rotate them around. So you'd have every other third or fourth game. All of a sudden, when you're on every game, you know, and then I learned to watch another team in compartments instead of watching their edit in compartments. So there was a transition segment, then there was a ball screen segment, then there was a half court action segment, then you had your baseline out inside stuff and specials, and then in the game critical. What are they going to go to for a 2 or 3? But the more I did it, I got more comfortable because you're like, man, folks can only run so much stuff.
No doubt.
But you get a head coaching job, boom. What are Brian Adams' defensive cornerstones or staples?
Yes. So I think on what you're discussing too, one thing, not even like a philosophy, but I do believe like you've got to have whatever it is you believe in defensively, you have to have a great base because that base, you know, has got to be what you get the guys to be the best at. And that base is, you know, your transition rules, how you want to defend one-on-one, whether it's no middle, square, pack line, like forcing middle, your help defense from there. Are you a gap team? Are you more in the gap? Are you in to get out? Are you more of a denial team? From their help, it moves on to your pick and roll defense. What's your pick and roll base with your 5? And then now in an age with, it depends on your personnel because your 4 could, and especially in college, your 4 could resonate more towards a 5. So what's his base? Or if you're a little more positionless, 1 through 4, potentially you're switching rules. Maybe you want a hard hedge with your 4s. That. So establishing your pick and roll base from there, you're moving to your screening action. What are you doing with off-ball screens? And I think you see more and more off-ball switching these days, and you can really be physical disruptive. But you can also – I've done it both ways now. And you can also maintain matchups if you don't switch and you have rules. Maybe they curl and they switch.
Yeah. So, and you can get lazy sometimes with switching too, because switching.
Oh, becomes, yeah. Point switching.
Point switching. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
And I do think there's a little bit of, it's a little harder to maintain your shell with off ball switching because you're thinking, I've got to get up into a body right now for a screening action. But some of the best teams that do switch completely blow things up and run around. So establishing your base in those areas is super important. With that said, though, I think ironically, I've said this for a long time that like the rim and the paint is your first priority. Can you take it away? And then from there, you're building out to your threes, your corners, your slots, top of the key. Ironically, my defense has always reflected a team that defends the three heavy and is just average around defending the paint. So if you watch, I do think the trends in the NBA and the trends in college, I think it's going a little more towards you can get a lot of mileage taking away the rim and paint first. So that's a huge goal of mine this year. And that I've never been a huge turnover team. I've been very conservative with how I teach it. And so now a year in college, I see that the talent level isn't quite what the NBA is, and that's no knock. College basketball is super talented. And I think with the portal and NIL, we're seeing it even grow talent-wise. But to this said, the NBA is the best league in the world, so spacing is a premium there, and multiple teams have it. Even teams that aren't necessarily having a great season have solid spacing and shooting around. So in college, I think you can get away with being more aggressive, and that's been a huge thing for me to learn a year into college, back into college. So what are the ways? I will never probably be a guy that fully believes in living in a blitz or a two on the ball, but I do think I now shift more towards how can you be super active, create turnovers in some basic ways, have your help a little more aggressive, and go from there with it. The other thing I've seen, the elite teams from studying them both, you just saw it with OKC, and you saw the Pacers, obviously, regular season, they were middle of the pack defensively, but their playoff defense was amazing.
Since January, when they got healthy, I think they were top five in the league.
Yeah, and that totally makes sense. The number one thing with the top, whether you go study St. John's, Tennessee, Michigan State, or then you take it to the NBA, Oklahoma City. The Clippers had an amazing year defensively. You go watch those teams to me. What stands out, they scramble. They do the best at when a play breaks down. One, you have your help rotations. So they either know it. Sometimes you see some beautiful low man or a trap the box and an X. But more importantly, they just go and cover for each other. Like some of the things Dort was doing or Caruso, I'm quite sure that wasn't necessarily a rule, but it was a way of playing, a way of thinking. It was a way of, I cover for you, you cover for me, help the helper. So that's been huge for me to see, finding ways that you can drill that, because sometimes you get stuck on basic teaching with defense. We're just going to do the closeout drill. We're just going to do our scripted shell. So how can you make it more randomized? You know what I mean? How can you challenge the guys? And so that's been something been in my head a lot lately as we approach like another season here. That
we could do this all night, man.
Yeah,
this is like, so good. Now, if I coached again today, I'm sorry, Doug, but I had a phrase in my head. If I coached again today, I would call any rotation man down 4-on-3, even if it's just basic 4-on-3 shell where you're just getting guys to fly around, 5-on-4 shell, no dribble, just getting guys to fly around.
I'm not giving away the company secrets, but we've done that more so far this summer than we did all year last year. And that's the goal is to do that.
I would call that stuff fire drills.
Yeah, I like that.
That would literally be my nickname for any scramble situation. I heard Rick Carlisle say in a clinic a long time ago, he said, offensively, we want to be a good scramble team, meaning a team that attacks when you have the advantage. You have 5 and they have 4. And then because some teams aren't very good at that.
No, 100%. And so
he said, we always want to be a good offensive scramble team. But if we can, I also want us to be a good defensive scramble team when you're down a man. And that ability, like you said, to put the fire out. So I would call those anything man down, 5-on-4 plus 1. 5-on-3 plus 2 transition, 5-on-4 half court, anything advantage, disadvantage, especially defensively, I would nickname those fire drills.
No, I like that. I like
that. That's literally like smell smoke. Somebody got beat, man. Smell smoke. Like, and so they just know a fire drill, the whole idea is it may not always, like you said, look just like a clinical rotation, but just having that continual will to get to the ball and then get one pass away as fast as we can. So because it's sometimes it isn't the first penetration that gets you, it's the second one.
No, it, multiple effort mentality. Multiple effort mentality.
So sorry, no,
that's
Dougie.
The one thing. If there's anything watching a team, like don't I've been able to go to a couple practices this past year and just watching other teams and games. Nothing, if you know what you're watching, especially as a coach, like nothing gets me more excited than seeing a scramble successfully on like on defense. Everybody successfully get the scramble and then they get the stop. The other team has to pull it out. And it's just like, oh, to the average fan, they're probably like, I have no idea what just happened. They got to stop. Oh, nice. But then to people who were sitting there watching it, you're like, that's something that's been worked on for a while. And you just watch it unravel right there. Oh. It's
so that last guy flying out on a challenge.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. And you say, please don't go in. Please don't go in because then I can clip this.
Fingers crossed.
That clip of St. John's that went viral on all the Twitter apps of them scrambling this year. It was pretty wild. You'll find it. Just search in Twitter, St. John's like defense. And this one clip, it's unbelievable of them just running around. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's man. No, we could do a whole pod on that, Doug. He got me fired up right there. Cause I had our defense when I was in Columbus. So it was like,
Yeah.
When you just that feeling when you're on every game, but it's you said something earlier that I think coaches, if they were listening, they'll take from it and they can really it'll make them better coaches. Your head coach has a standard for how he wants things done, and that's great. You know, we're all going to do what boss man wants. Let's serve the big guy. But when you develop your own standards as a coach, like you want to do things a certain way just because it becomes personal for you and you're putting your fingerprints on it. And like, I used to be an early guy. I used to turn jazz music on in the morning because I wanted to be in there early before chaos broke out. Cause by 9:30, the office is chaos. So those 3 hours would be great in terms of like just music, film, Starbucks. Oh, it is what it is. But
100%.
But when you know you're on every game, it creates like this, like the competitor in you wants to be at another level even more than what your head coach is asking. And that when you said that earlier about having your own standard and like you want to do things a certain way because it's yours.
100%.
That's a big, that's a huge deal. Like young coaches can, if they're paying attention and they apply that, it's going to really help them. So I'm glad you said that.
No, I appreciate it. No, it's huge. It's huge, and it can be your company.
There you go. Absolutely right.
Coach Adams, we appreciate you for being on here. And one thing that we always like to do just to tie everything in, wrap it all up, is really just going from the beginning and how we initially started to now, asking you the final question. If we were to put you back into that first role, that moment that got you into coaching with the Celtics, knowing what you know now, is there any advice you would share with your younger self?
Yeah, no, we've touched on the standard and that I think that what's helped me too over the years is to really view it as a craft. And this is your craft. And that no matter where you are in the journey, like basketball is great because you can study it and you can be good at it. So be awesome at the job you had. Be a star in your role for sure. And that's a cliched thing, but I do think the people who you've seen along the way, and when you take your blinders off and they're not being a star in the role and they're trying to nestle like for position, usually if you have your head down, you end up passing those guys. You end up passing those guys if you are going about your craft the right way and your standard. I think that like when in doubt, it being a craft, like that, I believe it's John Gordon has a book, The Craftsman, and it's about a guy who makes like furniture and builds stuff, but it talks about just like,
oh, the carpenter.
The carpenter, that's it. Yeah. Right. Such pride in his work. And I think I had a lot, you have a lot of time where you're just always wanting, you try not to get too caught up in what's next, but it's hard not to. But so in those moments, just lock in and just keep getting better at your craft. And master your role. And then there's always something that you can be studying to make yourself better, maybe not for the current situation you're in, and never let that affect your role right there, like master your job. But once you're done that and you've hit a good way with that, then you can always study. Basketball is insane. And I've had to have acceptance that you just can't study at all.
There's too much.
And I still go to bed at night sometimes. But no, so there's that. And then I think the other thing is too, is you look at the end of the day, we're in a profession that you got to remind yourself, like, we're coaching and we can get so caught up in the X's and O's and we can get so caught in this. But at the end of the day, if you can help your players get better, both as people and as like basketball players, but the two go hand in hand, like, then you've won. Oh, you've won. And listen, that's still not going to help after a buzzer beater loss or after a rough season. But if that is truly the goal of this thing, and you can go down the line and say, hey, whether he likes me or not, I try. I think you've won. And you just got to remember that, because we get all so caught up in the X's and O's. And I'm the first one to put my hand up that I do, you know. And then it's more important to be connecting with the guys. It's more important to be building good relationships, but also at the same time being transparent with them. Because I think we're also in an age where everybody wants to be their boy or everybody wants to be their friend. And so then when things get hard or things get rough, maybe it's harder for you to hold them accountable versus if you're truly their friend, just calmly, and you don't have to yell at people. You don't have to talk to them in a bad way, but just trying to give them transparent feedback and getting them to be their best self is huge. So I babbled on that. Yeah.
No, listen, man, that's solid gold, man. Please. I like to say, as coaches, we have two things. We have our passion, but then we have our ambition. And we can't ever let our ambition outrun our passion. So your passion's for where you are and what you're doing. Your ambition is for where you want to be and where you want to go. But if your ambition is outrunning your passion, then you can get it haywire and have it backwards. But if your passion is always outrunning your ambition, passion has the ability to bring ambition along with it.
100%.
And so I very rarely does ambition maybe have the ability to bring passion along with it, because it's such a dominant force, right? But passion can pull a lot of things in its wake behind the boat. When our passion outruns our ambition, we're in great shape. And I love what you said about the players, man. There's always a player that needs you in some way, shape, or form. You got 12 players, 15. There's never a time and never a day when a player can't use you or doesn't need you for something. And when they know you're unconditional, that's the thing. Because like you said, a lot of people in their lives right now are just coming and going, especially as this stuff is coming to play.
Very true.
People are coming and going, man. It's a revolving door. But once they know you're unconditional, no matter what, 24/7, rain, shine, win, lose, just being the same coach every day, that's a huge deal, man. Listen, before Dougie lands the plane, I just want to say thank you, man. I know we threw this thing together really fast, and I got to shoot Chris another thank you text for connecting us. But, man, Alabama's in good hands. So we appreciate you doing this, brother. It means a lot.
No, thank you guys for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
Yes, sir. No, it's a great opportunity. And I know we say it all the time, but truthfully, it shows a lot about coaches out there. And it should tell coaches out there, people like yourself, to be able to get on here and just, I know we're just talking basketball and talking about your journey. Like, everybody likes to talk about their journeys, but it's giving back to the other people out there. And at least for them to remember and, you know, something to keep in mind for 20, 30 years when whoever's listening to this becomes that, you know, Brian Adams over at Alabama, but obviously there'll be somebody else, but it's just always good to give back. So to you, we appreciate you. I'll be able to give your busy time and your busy schedule just a little bit of your time. Thank you, Coach.
Great stuff, man.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Yes, sir. And for everybody out there, thank you again for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. That does it for another episode. Your host, Doug Caputo, Alan Major, and all you coaches out there, keep working and keep rising, coaches. Take care. See you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.